Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and of course, the podcast as well at the 810 WHB app or Spotify, iTunes. We appreciate you subscribing and listening, and we might just do some more trivia again this coming week for some tickets to an upcoming Sporting Kansas City game as well. I am Nate Bucati, joined as always by the one and only El Jefe, Carter Augustine, who's back from a long journey from the GA Cup to San Jose, back here to Kansas City. You made it back in one piece. Carter, how are you, man?
Doing well, yeah. It was a long journey. Saw a lot of youth prospects down in the GA Cup. I was happy to be down there for the third year running, so it was a good time, and thanks for holding it down back here.
Yeah, and what did you think of the competition overall, and how about an MLS team coming away with the trophy this time around, the Seattle Sounders U-17s?
Yeah, it is good competition overall, I would say, and it seems like the MLS teams are getting better and better in this competition, and the first time an MLS team won the top division, the champions division in the GA Cup. It's a really good crop of kids with Seattle. They actually played kind of up a year last year and won the lower division in the GA Cup. So I think they use that experience to go forward this year. So I think that's just the benefit of having a bunch of kids around the same age that are really good. And so credit to them. And that's just good to see MLS winning the competition. Overall, there are a lot of prospects, I think, down there in MLS. Talked to you about a few of them last week, and I think we'll see a lot of kids that'll come through and try and be the next Gianluca Busio or Gio Reyna, who did showcase their talents at GA Cups in past years.
All right, then you went to San Jose. Tough result for Sporting Kansas City. That one, San Jose just jumped out on top of Sporting Kansas City right away. And a SKC team that was already banged up going in, the injury to Matt Beisler on top of that, and then it just didn't seem like Sporting could quite recover from, well, they had a chance to get back in the game, the missed penalty maybe hurt. What did you think the team felt as they walked away from that one since you were on the sideline there?
Yeah, I feel like they want to get right back at it. Seems like obviously they'll just be very disappointed with the way they played because of it was a man-to-man matchup style that San Jose plays, and so you heard it from Peter Vermes on the post game. They just got they played them off the field, San Jose did, and they won a lot of their man-v-man matchups. And so I think I don't know about you, but if you're a player, probably you're looking at that saying, well, we didn't put our best effort here today, and we'd like to get back to it. I did get a chance to talk to Ilya today, and he said that first goal was so crucial because of the way that San Jose plays. If you're patient with the ball and the way they play, gaps will start to open and you can play through them. But he felt that after giving up that first goal, they started to chase a little bit more and try and get back into the game and maybe weren't as patient as they needed to be.
Well, they got hit with one big punch, and then 5 minutes later they got hit with another. And then that was the one it seemed like then they just really couldn't recover from that point going forward.
I do wonder, obviously, the missed penalty at 2-0 down. And maybe if they grab that one just before halftime, maybe things turn out a little bit differently. And then giving up a goal right at the halftime kick. I mean, that I think was another crucial blow by San Jose.
Yeah, if you're coming out, you do your locker room speech, you maybe make a couple of changes. This is what we're going to do. You give up that goal, 1 minute into the start of the second half, and it seems like it all just kind of goes out the window at that point.
Yeah.
So maybe no reason to belabor that game as we'll look forward. But the injuries are becoming a significant issue, as we saw the news from Sam McDowell's article today that Matt Beisler is going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. Roger Espinoza, longer than that. So Sporting, they're missing a couple of key pieces that some guys are going to have to really step up.
Yeah, that's going to be really interesting. We saw a little bit of rotation throughout the Champions League, but not a whole lot. I mean, we did see a few guys step in a few games here and there, but it's going to be really interesting to see who steps up for the losses of two monumental players, especially the leadership skills. I'm curious to see how that goes without having two leaders on the pitch for an extended period of time.
The positive is you still got players like Ilya and Felipe Gutierrez out there who are veterans that that hopefully can take on some of that leadership. Graham Zusi, Seth Sinovic, should they be in the game? But you're right. I mean, one guy wears the captain's band, and the other guy has worn the captain's band from time to time for Sporting KC. So, yeah, there's going to be a lot to deal with. And I think one of the interesting things about it, we talk so much about the depth of the team going into this season, but the depth has been injured. You know, players like Jalen Lindsey and Hurtado and Rodney Wallace, those were guys that were brought in to be the depth. Or, you know, Jalen Lindsey was already here, but and, you know, Zalalem gets banged up. There's depth in the midfield as well. So it's ironic how it works out sometimes. Some of the guys that were brought in to come in case other guys get injured ended up being some of the guys getting injured themselves.
Yeah, that's a really interesting way to look at it. You know, I think last year they were pretty fortunate in the way of injuries. They didn't really have they had a couple. You know, Felipe was hurt for a good period during the summer, but for the most part, they were able to keep everyone healthy. And you saw how well they played throughout the year. And so now that a little bit of adversity here in the early stages of the season, there will have to be some guys that step up because points are crucial. Even now, we see that the top of the West starting to kind of race off with wins every week, it seems.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So you don't want to dig too big of a hole for yourself. We know that there's a long way to go in this MLS season, but you want to at least stay in striking range of those teams until you get all your guys back. So with that, we've got a big show for you coming up. One of the guys that made his MLS and Sporting Kansas City debuts over the weekend, Abdul Kwatubyaye. Let's get to know him a little bit. Yeah. He comes from Rwanda. We'll learn about where he's from, what he's all about, and also Academy Director John Perry as he continues to build the pipeline of players like Jean-Luc Aboussio and Daniel Shalloway and Jalen Lindsey to the MLS level. Those two guys are going to be our guests on the show, so you're going to want to sit down and listen in coming up as we are underway with the Sporting Kansas City Show. The Sporting Kansas City Show continues on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB. And, of course, we appreciate you listening on the podcast as well at 810WHB.com, on the Sports Radio 810 app, and, of course, iTunes, Spotify, wherever else you get your podcasts as well. It is time for us to talk to a man who made his Sporting Kansas City debut this past weekend as Sporting were in San Jose, Abdul Kwatubyaye. Did I say it correctly?
That's it.
I got it right. Okay, good. How are you, man?
I'm fine.
Good. It was kind of an interesting situation for you in this game because it's never easy for a defender to get subbed into a game because of an injury like that.
Yeah.
Tell me what that was like for you this past weekend in San Jose.
Actually, as you said, it's very tough to be in the game, you know, on the 15 minutes. So what I had is to be focused and it was really excited for me to be on the field with the Sporting. So I'm really excited. I take it as an opportunity to show myself, to show the fans what I have, to show the coach, and to give support to my teammates and everything.
What was it like playing in MLS for the first time? I know you've been on the bench a few times, so you've seen it from the sideline, but what was it like being out there on the pitch against San Jose?
What can I say is like... that was my the dream coming true. You know, it's a very big opportunity. It's a very very big chance for me to be there. So it's a dream coming true for me to be in the field with Sporting. I was very excited. I was very happy, and I'm ready to give more.
Okay, I thought this would be just a good chance for our fans to get to know you a little bit because we'll get to know you on the field, but. Yeah. Maybe learn a little bit more about who Abdul Kwatubyaye is coming here. First of all, you're from Kigali, Rwanda.
Yeah.
That is the capital of the country, right?
Yeah.
Pretty big city, about 1 million people or so. What is the city like? What was it like growing up there?
The city is not that big because according to the country, we got like 4 million population. So the city is not that big. It's a small city. It's a clean one. So we had a very bad situation back in 1994, you know, and now the government and everything, they have to, like, we're improving in everything. The city is clean. There's an improvement of in the, so I can say that between the people, between us, so things are good now. We're trying to achieve more. Yeah.
So you mentioned what happened in 1994. I was in high school at that time. And here in the United States, we were showed on the news a lot what was happening in Rwanda and this tragedy of the genocide and everything that was taking place. Mm-hmm. You weren't born until 1996.
Yeah.
So how much are you taught a lot about what happened in school when you grow up? You obviously know all about it. So tell me what the experience is like growing up, being born after all of that took place.
I've grown up, so my family, we had so many people around in 1994, so a lot of people died in my family, so like it was very interesting to know what happened, to know where were the rest of the survivors were, and to grow up knowing the history of the country, it was very important. And I wasn't born, like you said, I'm from 1996. So it was interesting to know what happened, and if there is something that we can do as a new generation to do not let that thing happen again, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how it was.
So what was it like growing up in Rwanda after all this happened? And maybe from a soccer aspect, is soccer the biggest sport in Rwanda? Just kind of tell us maybe about you growing up as a kid in Rwanda.
So me growing up as a kid, I just grew up in a family like we mixed. We got people from Congo, and Rwanda. So we mixed. So my family back in 1994, there was they went to Congo and Uganda and then come back after the war. Some of them. So I was born in Rwanda, 1996, and. I grew up in a family where there's positive thoughts, and you can say we didn't have if you grew up, you want to be a soccer player, so you wouldn't have so much support, you know, back in our country. So you have to do things, all the things, I can say most of the thing alone, on your own. Mm. Like, you have to be strong. If you have that dream to become a pro soccer player, you have to do much. You have to be giving all your energy just to be a pro soccer player. That's how I grew up, and I can say my education wasn't bad also. So I grew up in a school. That's what helped me playing soccer too.
Yeah. Okay, and your English is very good. Now, I didn't know this, but I was looking, reading up on Rwanda a little bit. Is English is one of the national languages? Is everybody taught English in Rwanda, or just was that at the school that you went to?
We started school, it was French before.
Okay.
They changed to English in 2009. That's when we switched to French.
Okay.
So all this school had to be learning English from 2009.
So you speak French and English then?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a third language as well, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's that one? That's that one. I don't think many people are as familiar.
Back in our country?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's Kinyarwanda.
Kinyarwanda.
Yeah.
Okay. So was that your first language then? Or?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's our first. Yeah. That's our first.
Do you chat with Johan in French here in
A little bit. A little bit. I'm trying to get my French back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does it come back pretty quick?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you've mentioned your family quite a few times. So did your parents have to leave the country before when everything was happening in the 90s and then come back? That's what happened?
Yeah. Okay. I have a big family, so yeah. Most of them went to Rwanda when it mm-hmm. happened, and half of them went to Congo and Uganda, mm-hmm. the neighbors' countries.
Refugees, basically?
Yeah, I have refugees, mm-hmm. and they had to come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a lot of brothers and sisters?
I only have two siblings.
Okay.
A sister and a brother.
Yeah.
So they are the oldest.
Okay. You're the youngest one.
Yeah.
Did they play soccer too?
My brother played soccer.
Yeah.
But he retired at a young age.
Okay.
He wasn't motivated, so uh-huh. he retired. Yeah.
How much older than you is your brother?
My brother is 29 now. Okay. My sister is 26.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you get to play a lot of soccer with your brother, or was he already done by the time you started, taking it seriously?
Oh, he went to the first division 3 years before me, and
okay.
I was in the academy. So I didn't have much time to play with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's go back to, is soccer the biggest sport in Rwanda, or do a lot of kids play it, or are there other big sports
yeah.
there?
It's a big, yeah.
Okay.
It's a big one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what, you came up through the academy, and when did you kind of start getting involved in the professional ranks?
So in 2009, I went to the academy. It's for the team called APR. It's a first division team. So they have an academy. So I went there. So I spent like 2 years and a half in the academy. And then if I remember well, I was called up for the national team U17 in 2013. After that, I went to the first division as a loan from the APR. It's one of the team. I was loaned to a team called Isonga. It was in the first division. So after that, I spent like 1 year, one season, and then I went back to APR in 2014.
What is the professional league like in Rwanda in terms of the quality of play and also maybe the fields, you know, the surfaces that you play on, the facilities, the stadiums? What's the league like?
It's not that good, but we're trying to improve. We're trying to build up some beach. Like we play on turf most of the time.
Okay.
We play on turf, so like we got a few turf and others are not tough. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's only grasses, but not good.
Not good grass.
Yeah, not good grass.
A lot of dirt and things like clumps mm-hmm. of grass mm-hmm. and stuff mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, that's yeah. how it is.
Okay.
So now we haven't been like a pro league now. It's not a pro league. It's like an amateur, something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're trying to improve, but there's a lot of talent there, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did you go from playing in Rwanda to learning about Sporting Kansas City? How did this come together, you coming here?
So before coming here, I was like going to Turkey for the trials and everything, but I wasn't lucky. And in 2017, I was in Turkey. So coming back to Rwanda, I tore my ACL. And then after that, I went out of the pitch almost 1 year. I was out. Mm-hmm. And then coming back, that's where I signed with Rayon Sport, my former team now. And so these two guys, one from Italy and one from Brazil, they are agents. They work like mm-hmm. Agents, yeah. But one lived in the U.S. So they kind of discovered me. I don't know how they discovered me. So one who called Andre talked to me and on Instagram. And he was like, I really like you. I really like your talent. I think you can be a good player. You can make the pro leagues. So I want to introduce you to my coworker so that we can work with you. We can introduce you to U.S. teams and everything. So I said, it's okay. I'm ready to go.
So did you have an agent before that?
No, actually, no.
You just were working on your own, basically.
Yeah.
Wow. So a guy reaches out to you on Instagram. Mm-hmm. You don't know anything about this guy, right?
No.
Did you have to? I mean, that could be a little scary, right? Because there could be some characters out there that mm-hmm. you don't know if you can trust them or not.
When you're in Africa, you mm-hmm. just take every opportunity, you know.
Yeah.
You don't have to be like, let me try him, let me trust him, because there's a lot of guys who not to trust. In
yeah.
Africa, you know.
Yeah.
So it's a risk, like trusting someone mm-hmm. who you don't know, and like you can't sign with him, or you can tell him that let's work things out and see if it works, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it was.
So this all happens, and somehow you get involved with Sporting Kansas City, and you're making the move over to the United States. Did you know much about MLS? Did you know much about the United States as a country, and did you know much about Kansas City?
When I started like being interested in MLS, I didn't know about Sporting, but who's this one from Barcelona, David Villa?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when he came and these strong athletes, like I can say Ibrahimovic, top high, like that's when I started like looking at MLS, say what's this league looks like. So I was interested in coming here. So when before coming here, I went to a team called Skopje from Macedonia.
Okay.
So they wanted to loan me there, and we were in Turkey for like we made a camp there for 2 weeks. And after that, I told Andre, the agent, so that I'm going to sign with this team because I don't want to go back to Rwanda because I just want to make a move, you know. And then I think that Andre, that's when he started pushing things up, you know. And then he said, please trust me, don't sign anything. I just want to introduce you to between Sporting. And I don't remember this team from Canada who plays in MLS too.
Either Montreal, Toronto,
yeah,
or
Vancouver. Between. Yeah. He represented me between those teams and Sporting. And I think Sporting were interested in me. That's when they said that they can sign me. And I was really happy. And that team from Scoopy needed me too. But I said, it's a great move. Let me go to the MLS because it's better. It's more, much better than here.
And you had never been here before you signed. Is that correct?
I've never.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me what it was like when you got here. Let's start with this area first, the facility, the team, the organization. Mm-hmm. What did you think you were getting into? And then when you walked into this place, we're at Pinnacle right now. When you walked in here, what did you think?
All right. So to be honest, it was a surprise.
Yeah.
And then when I signed with Sporting, I didn't know much about Sporting, but I searched it on the internet. I saw that it's a team who wants to win. It's a team who wants trophies. So that's what I grew up with. Because in the team where I was, APR, we were like winning trophies all the time. All the pressure, if you don't win, we have to be pressed, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I was interested to sign with Sporting. And it's a very big team, I can say. Like the last time they were the first in the Eastern Conference, I can say. Mm-hmm. If it's not Western, something like that. So I was like, okay, let me go and see how this team works because I'm interested. And when I arrived here, everything was like a miracle to me, you know. The facilities here, the Pinnacle, the stadium, the player care and everything, the teammates, it's amazing. It's really amazing.
And how's it been going in the locker room, getting to know your new teammates? Has it been some fun or what's that been like?
So I've never been to a locker room like that. So it's crazy. It's really crazy. The teammates are amazing, excited. We're laughing at the locker. Everything is good. The mood is very good. The atmosphere is good also. So it's a very interesting place to be. Yeah.
You hear stories sometimes in other countries where when you're on a professional team, a new guy shows up and maybe not all of the teammates are excited to see the new guy. You have to prove yourself before we let you in.
Yeah.
Was it like that here, or was it, hey, man, welcome. Were people reaching out to you and introducing themselves? What was that like, getting to know everybody?
So I've been with so many pro teams, but it's very special. Because my first day coming here, it was Roger. Roger brought me here. Yeah. He gave me a ride. So we really talked a lot about the team. Yeah, we had a conversation, and that's why I said, okay, this team is very interesting because it's my first time meeting a guy like this, and he's talking to me like this. He's very nice. He introduced me to everything. When we reached here, he showed me everything, the locker rooms, where the meeting have to be, what you don't have to do, where the kitchen and everything, you know. So I was really happy, and when I went to the locker room, they showed me my locker, and I was introduced to everyone, you know. Everyone was coming to me, telling his names, and welcoming me, and it was really amazing.
So what do you remember, anything in specific that Roger said to you on that drive? Was there anything that he said that really stood out to you about what you were going to expect from this experience?
So he told me that I'm going to be crazy if I see the Pinnacle. That's what he told me.
Yeah.
And
were you?
Yeah, I was crazy.
Yeah.
It's really amazing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've gotten along with the teammates. What about the head coach, Peter Vermees? What's it been like talking with him and kind of fitting into his system here at Sporting KC?
First of all, I really do like seeing Peter laughing. I really do like seeing Peter laughing. So I don't want to see Peter like when he's mad and everything, you know.
Nobody wants to see that.
Yeah. He's a really good guy, and these two assistant coaches, they're really good. oldest have. It's all I can say is this is a really good place to be, like a pro. Like when you want to play football, this is a really good place to be. Yeah.
They have such a specific style of play, you know, that that they want to play, the system.
Yeah, they want to keep the ball.
Yeah. How is that similar to the way you played, or how much of an adjustment is it for you learning this new system?
So I can say back to our country, we don't have a lot. So you can play whatever you want. You can play whatever you want. So I was surprised reaching here. So that's one of my my qualities, keeping the ball, keeping the ball all the time, winning possession, never lose the ball. So that's what I like. Mm-hmm. So it's a really good place to be here too.
What about the city itself? What have you thought of Kansas City since you've been here? You probably haven't had a whole lot of time to get around, but what have you seen of it, and what do you think of the city so far?
So the city is very nice. It's very beautiful. So I haven't been to many places, but I visited this museum of World War One. Mm-hmm. I've been there. So, but I haven't entered in. So I've been to the place around, mm-hmm. but it's really nice, and I've met a few people around, so the people are nice.
Have you tried any what do you think of the food compared to what you're used to eating back in Rwanda?
It's totally different. It's totally different, because when I was called up for the national team, when I reached home, because I had one day to say hi to my family, I told them that I want to eat. Yeah. Because it's totally the taste and everything, it's different. It's different.
Getting that home food cooking, that's got to feel good.
Yeah.
Just quickly, I do want to touch on the national team. You got to go back. You played against Ivory Coast. What's it like to represent Rwanda and play for your national team? You said that you've been doing that since the youth stages as well.
Yeah, as you see, it's been a very good state for me to be with the national team since when I was 17. So back to my country, when we were playing Ivory Coast, we were knocked out. We had nothing left. So we went there and we played and we lost. So it's I can say individually, it was very nice. But we have to accept it. And we're preparing for the next national team qualifier.
Well, Abdul, we really appreciate the time and the ability to get to know you a little bit. We hope to have you on again real soon, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay, good, good. We hope you come around to the food a little bit too. We hope you start to like it as time goes on.
But I like it. I like Chipotle.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. That's good. Yeah, I think everybody likes Chipotle.
Yeah.
I had that for dinner last night, actually.
Yeah.
That's Abdul Guatubiaye. We'll take a break. Come back with John Perry to learn about the youth system here. It's born in Kansas City as well. Right after this. And welcome back to the Sporting Kansas City Show on your home for SKC Soccer, Sports Radio 810 WHB, and on the podcast page at the 810 WHB app, and of course on Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. Nick Ucadia along with Carter Augustine. Our thanks to Abdul Guatubiaye. A fascinating conversation. What a life he's had already, and hopefully really good stuff to come from him in Sporting Kansas City's future. And now it's time to talk a little more about Sporting KC's future with the Academy Director for SKC. His name is John Perry. You probably hear us talk about him a lot, but we're going to talk with him in person now. John, how are you, man?
Doing well, thanks.
So let's talk about your responsibilities a little bit right off the bat. Academy Director. Tell me, maybe just give us the idiot's guide, the Cliff Notes version of what it is that you do for the organization.
Well, it's changed over the last several years. When I first started, I'm the longest tenured academy director in the league. I've been there for 11 years.
Wow.
The next longest tenured academy director, I believe, is 7 years, and then it's five and below. So there's been a lot of changeover, and I think that's one of the reasons we've had a lot of success, is we've had the consistency of having a good staff and me being here for so long. And so I oversee everything. I used to be a coach in the academy. I was coaching three teams 4 years ago. A year ago, January, I stopped coaching completely, and we have full-time staff. We have a U12 coach, U13, U14, U15, and then the 17s and 19s are run by Rumba Manthali. And so I observe the trainings. I help with the trainings, watch a lot of games. We just hired our first full-time scout, Josh Duffy, who started on March 1st, and he'll be relocating here in June. And so a lot of my time now is done scouting players and identifying the next Busios or Jalen Lindsays or Daniel Shalloways out there that we can have come through our academy. So it's everything. I mean, it's like basically like being a general manager of a team. I oversee those six teams and for our entire academy.
Okay, so 11 years. What's the landscape now in the academy setup, maybe specifically with Sporting as opposed to 11 years ago?
I was coaching the teams. We had maybe two coaches, three teams. Facilities have changed immensely. I giggle and get giddy every time I drive over to Swope, and then to be here at Pinnacle a couple days a week with the first team. Our staff comes over here. It's truly incredible to see the resources that we have behind us, and really just having a full-time staff, having the resources to do that has been incredible. And we're way ahead of the game in that regard in comparison to a lot of the other MLS academies.
There's still so much room for growth, too, at the same time, right? I mean, and Carter was down at the GA Cup, and I know Sporting's U-17s were down there as well. You're measuring up not just against other academy teams in MLS, but around the world. That's the competition, too, right? It's not just the teams here in the United States.
For sure, and that's something that Peter and I have talked about a lot, and we think we need to embark on trying to have more international competitions for all of our teams, and so that's something we're working on. Now that we've got the solidarity deal going with Major League Soccer, and we're going to be able to get training compensation for our players, that's going to help a bunch. We've lost, you know, Eric Palmer Brown was in our academy since he was 11 years old, and he went on a free transfer. So we missed out on potentially signing him or getting money for him, I should say. And so now that that's happened, I think it's going to be easier. This was the first year that an MLS team won the GA Cup. The Seattle Sounders beat Valencia in the final. Was a fantastic game, and you know, we're watching the game, and there's not much difference between the players. We're right there with them, and now with the pathway being completed with the B teams, that helps us a bunch. So we have a pathway that we feel rivals the rest of the world now with the addition of the B team.
I'm glad you mentioned that the solidarity payments, because that just came down the pipeline, right, in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
You talked about it a little bit there, but kind of what does that do for MLS academies and just the youth soccer in America?
Yeah, I think it's massive. It basically, any kid who wants to go to Europe, if they're with an MLS academy team, then we're going to get compensation, training compensation. And they're still finalizing all the numbers and everything, but I think usually it's like each year is worth X amount of dollars. So if we have a kid in our academy for 12 years and then when he turns 18, he goes to Europe, then we're going to get something for him. So it's a massive step for U.S. soccer.
We're visiting with John Perry. He is the academy director for Sporting Kansas City. And you mentioned, I mean, look, we saw what Seattle did. Some organizations invest more heavily in that aspect of their team than others, but it does seem like across MLS there is becoming more and more of an emphasis of homegrown type players, bringing guys up through the system and all that. So what's the landscape like when it comes to trying to find that next Gianluca Busio or Jalen Lindsay? Those guys came from North Carolina. What's the competition like now for kids basically that you can get into your system?
Yeah, it's it's basically the recruitment of the players has become massive. We have an internal policy where we want to have 75% to 80% of our kids from our region within, you know, Kansas City, 3.5-hour radius. Our territories are the states of Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma. But we also want to make sure that we're on those special players like the Bustios and the Jalen Lindsays. It's important to be able to recruit those guys. I would say when we're looking at the top players who are not part of MLS academies, it's Sporting Kansas City, Atlanta United, Philadelphia Union. Those are kind of the front runners in regards to it, and I think we're the most organized in regards to our residency program. We just try to have a good pulse on that. But we've also they keep mentioning that the territories are going to be lifted, which we are huge proponents of. And if that happens, we've got a pretty good pulse on the kids in those areas as well.
Because the territories as they stand right now, when you talk about it from like a club's perspective, like yours or the kid's perspective, you know, a kid grows up in a certain area, and all of a sudden he's beholden to that organization that's in his area, even if they don't invest as heavily in the development of young players. So that kid would get the choice to go, hey, I want to go play for an organization that cares a lot about developing players, and for an organization like you, that gives you a leg up, right? You can say, hey, look, we've got this entire infrastructure in place that we know what we're doing when it comes to developing young players.
Yeah, and I think it's important for the parents to have a say in that. If you're in an area in an MLS market and you don't like the way the team plays, or maybe you don't have a head coach that believes in the youth movement, then, you know, they should have a choice to go where they want to go. And I think that's one great thing here is, you know, Peter believes in the youth. You know, Bustillo's scoring goals at 16. Tyler Freeman's sitting on the bench right now and, you know, going to Cincinnati. And I think you're going to see a lot more. We feel like we got a lot in the pipeline. But I think that having a coach that really believes in that system is absolutely massive.
You mentioned the residency program. I had the chance to have Gianluca Busio in studio on the morning show earlier this week, and he talked about the host family that he lives with and how, look, for a 16-year-old kid, he's missing out on. He said the only holiday that he got to go home for last year was Christmas. He wasn't complaining about it, but he said what makes it all right is he's got a host family to live with. How do you need more host families? You know, what's the process like for finding those? And if people are interested in maybe becoming that, you know, give a little pitch to that right now.
Yeah, for sure. Gianluca's got a great host family. And they are the host families have become a huge part of their development off the field. You know, we talked about building dorms. That would be the easiest thing for us is just to build a dorm and hire some people to put them in there. But We like the family aspect. We like that the kids go and sit down and have dinner. You know, Gianluca talks about going to his little sister's host sister's games and doing things like that. Jalen, you know, he had to go to one of the host family daughter's singing thing, and you know, they're being dragged all over the place. So, but it's good, and I think that the host families are people that are gonna, you know, they have a major impact on these guys. So. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most difficult pieces for our residency program is finding people who are willing to do it, and they're opening up their homes, and it's not always easy. I've hosted kids. I've hosted two kids in our program. I wanted to do it to see what it was like, and, you know, they're not doing their laundry. You got to tell them to clean up stuff. They become like one of your kids. And so, you know, we're always looking for host families. We've got on our website, sportingkcacademy.com, we've got a residential program there. It's got FAQs and questions. And we have a director of player care, Betsy Maxfield, and she vets all the host families. She goes and does inspections of their house, make sure that the kids' living arrangements are good, and we do background checks on everybody. And so it's a good program. And, yeah, we definitely need more host families.
I want to backtrack a little bit because as a Midwest kid growing up, I like the number you put out of the percentage that you want from the region. I'm curious, what do you think is the talent level in the region at the moment? I'm from Iowa. I don't know last I checked, we didn't have a player from Iowa in MLS at the time. So, and we've only had a couple over the entire history of the league. I know in Iowa, the level hasn't always been up to what we see in other states. What do you think is kind of the state of Midwest youth development at the moment?
I think it's stronger than ever. I think with the impact the academies have had it shows kids that there's a pathway for them to, like, I wanted to be a professional soccer player when I was a kid. I had no idea how I was going to get there. I knew I had to go to college, and then I was hoping and praying that I was going to have a place to have an opportunity to play. So these kids, the pathway's laid out for them. We have the largest affiliate program in Major League Soccer. We have 14 affiliate clubs. Sporting Iowa is one of them, and they're doing a good job of developing players, and we keep tabs on a lot of those kids. I think the biggest thing for us it's important for us to get the kids in as early as possible. So we start at U12, and I'm pushing Peter to start at U9 because I think it makes a big difference, the stuff that we're doing with our technical trainer, Michelle Ribeiro, and we can just accelerate their development for another 3 years. And what we're now seeing is we're not having as much turnover with our teams. A couple years ago, we'd lose like 7-8 players. We'd have to cut kids or send them back into the club system, which isn't always a bad thing because we're trying to do what's best for those kids as well. But if we can get them earlier and they stay with us and we have more continuity, it makes a big difference.
Gosh, I got to say, as a parent of a 9-year-old, that freaks me out, thinking that the kids are already getting identified at that age. Because I know, like, just from my own childhood, the kids grow and develop in fits and starts, right? Like a kid that at 9 years old might be the biggest stud on the field in 3 years. He might not have changed at all. So how do you guys evaluate situations like that as kids continue to ebb and flow and grow at different rates?
We try not to make mistakes, but we're going to. One thing with Michel Ribeiro coming from Belgium, from Genk, he's been doing what we want to do for the last 15 years at an extremely high level. He had 8 players that played in the last World Cup in Russia. So he's been a huge part of educating our staff in regards to what to look for in talent. And so that it's been fun. It's been very educational for us. And listen, we have arguments and we disagree and guys get upset, but at the end of the day, we're all, heading in the same direction. Give you a couple of examples. When Michel got here 18 months ago, I took him to North Carolina for the U13 and U14 DA showcase just to show him the landscape. And we found 2 players. One is Thomas Mancuso, and the other one is Luke Rydell. Thomas Mancuso lives in North Carolina. His family is moving here. We've tracked him for the last, 18 months. His mom and dad are divorced, and both families are moving here to Kansas City in June, and he's going to play in our academy. And we think he's got the potential to be a pro. And then the same with Luke Rydell. His dad was ready to move like immediately, but he said, look, if I move, my daughter's going to resent me for the rest of her life because she's a senior. So she's now graduating. And so the family's moving here in June or July also. So we track those kids. We've got kids from Oklahoma that we've identified that are just special talents, and they're looking to move here. We would never take a kid that young into residency. For residency, it's more, that eighth grade, freshman year. Eighth grade's still really young. Will Little moved here when he was a sophomore, and it was almost too late. So we try to get him here, and we throw all the cards out on the table and say, hey, look, the best thing is for this family to stay together, and people are strongly considering it, but they have special. The kids have special talents, and they want to make the best decision for them.
It's really interesting stuff. We could spend all afternoon talking with you about this stuff, John, but I want to remind everybody, if you heard this stuff about being a host family and it's something that you're interested in or you know somebody that might be interested, what an incredible and unforgettable experience it would be. Go to sportingkc.com and click on the Academy tab. If you click on the Academy tab, it'll take you through a lot of those frequently asked questions and all those things, and who knows, man? You might have the next Gianluca Abbuccio going to your kids' soccer games and all that stuff and being part of the family. It could be really cool. John, thanks so much for the time. We'll have you on maybe later in the season to kind of get updated on everything that's going on with all the Academy programs.
Sounds great.
All right, that is John Perry, and that's going to do it, Carter, for this edition of the Sporting Kansas City Show. So before we sign off real quick, SKC New England Revolution coming up on Saturday at 7:30. Let's talk about this for a little bit, Carter. What do you think are some of the big keys for Sporting KC? We know they're dealing with some injuries right now to try to get back on the right side of things after a tough one last weekend.
Yeah, I think this seems like a game that the guys might want to be in midweek. I think they want to kind of get back on the field as quickly as possible. But I thought it was interesting talking to PV today at training. In regards to the injuries, he said there might be some situations here for some guys that need to step up, need to have some courage and be in positions that they haven't been throughout this season. I think especially when you look at the news on Matt Beisler and Roger Espinoza being out, these are two leaders of the team and two guys that are pretty tough to replace. I know that they think they have one of the deeper squads that they've had here in years, and it's time to see if that is the case. And it's going to be a big call for some of these guys to step in and play in this game. New England Revolution coming off their best game of the year. So this is a team that you would look at home saying, hey, this is a team that Sporting should beat at home and get all 3 points. But they're in a little bit of good form here, getting a clean sheet and starting to maybe round into a little better form than what we've seen from them. So it's going to be an interesting one. And Ilya actually compared the way that they press to the way that San Jose presses. So maybe that's something to watch out for as well, getting another taste of that right off the back of that Earthquakes game.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I mean, that's something that maybe gets your attention right there, because obviously Sporting had a difficult time with that with San Jose. The New England Revolution, that was their second win on the season, a 1-0 victory over the New York Red Bulls last weekend in New England. But it was Brad Friedel really catching a lot of people's attention with the comments he made with the team struggling a few weeks ago about the lack of pressure maybe that that MLS players are under. In his view, you don't have some crazed fan waiting in the parking lot to assault you afterwards if you have a bad game and those things. I know we've already kind of had our fun with that, and doesn't seem that Peter Vermes usually has too much of a problem motivating his players. But like you said, I mean, the Revolution bounced back. Maybe he is getting to his players a little bit. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, we did have a little fun with it. I still don't. I kind of get what he's saying in terms of maybe some of the live or die aspect in other leagues, but at the same time, I don't think that's good fan culture to be having to meet fans out when you're out and about. I think that's something that as American sports fans, we're usually pretty good at across all sports, and especially in Kansas City, I would say guys can go out on the town and have a bite to eat without getting hounded by fans, and so I don't think that's a good part of culture in sports in other leagues. What about you?
I'm with you. I don't think that kind of pressure is positive pressure. I think we saw it in Toluca. When the fans turned on their own team, it did not help. It made things worse. I think the pressure these guys are all playing for their jobs. To me, do you need more pressure than if you don't perform, you're out of a job? If as a competitor, you need the threat of a fan accosting you after a game to get you to want to give your best effort, as opposed to the threat that my coach is going to bench me or cut me, I think they got a problem right there anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there's pressure there. And then on the other side, are these guys not trying to win regardless? Are they not trying to get a championship under their belt? What's the point of it all if you need a Boca Juniors fan throwing a flare at you or something to make you want to win a championship? But yeah, I don't understand that part. I didn't understand what Brad Friedel was saying, but maybe it's gotten under his players, lit a fire under them. I don't know.
Well, and I will say my last point on that is that you see this sometimes when coaches will blame a generation. Oh, these kids these days, they don't understand pressure, things like that. Well, you're competing against other people that are the same age. Like if you hear a college coach talking about, well, kids these days don't understand this and that. Well, you're competing against other college kids. So all you have to do is teach your kids to appreciate it more than the other college kids. If you're an MLS coach and you think that your kids don't have enough pressure, well, you're competing against other MLS teams, and they're somehow mustering up enough energy and motivation to win games. That's all you've got to do. So to me, that right there makes it a cop-out.
Kids these days versus kids these days. And
right. It's
not like the New England Revolution are playing against Bolton Wanderers, who just got relegated. So.
Right. It's exactly right. So we'll see, though. It's going to be an interesting one because Sporting Kansas City, their depth is getting tested in a massive way. I mean, you're going to see upwards of 7 to 8 names on the injury list again this week. So we'll see how Sporting Kansas City deal with it. 7:30 at Children's Mercy Park on Saturday. Of course, our pregame coverage on Fox Sports Kansas City Plus will begin at 7 o'clock and on the Fox Sports Go app. And then, of course, game coverage you can listen to right here as well on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So our thanks to John Perry for joining us, and our thanks as well to Abdul Gwatu Biaye. Fascinating conversation with both of those guys. And we'll see you next week on the Sporting Kansas City Show.